Hi everybody, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is another in the series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And in today's episode, I want to give you an update with regards to the expectations for power in Europe this winter. The authorities in charge of modelling all of the supply and demand requirements for Europe over the next few months have finished all of their analysis, and unfortunately their conclusions are that there may be shortfalls this winter. So we'll go through exactly what they've said and what the implications of that are for all of the countries, and then I'll provide you with an update on the political tug of war that's taking place right now between Russia and Ukraine over the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. Now, this power plant is located within the occupied territory, so Russian forces are surrounding the plant right now. But with a nuclear power station, you can't just switch it off and leave it to its own devices, because the uranium within that plant is active and it needs to be managed on a daily basis. It needs to be cooled to make sure that it doesn't overheat and we get some form of meltdown. So the people who work in that plant are really important to the safety of the area. And there's now a major problem because President Putin has passed his decree and declared all of this area to be part of Russia. And now he wants to take over full control of the power station and all of the people who work within it. And as you might expect, Ukraine and the West are not happy with this proposal, so they've refused to accept the situation. But in the middle of all of this, we have a power plant with active uranium within it. So in today's video, we'll have a look in a bit more detail at what goes on in a nuclear reactor, how they actually work and how you make them safe, and what the risks are with regards to the situation and whether or not this could actually result in a nuclear meltdown. Because I posted in a recent video that the plant has been shut down, which is correct, but that doesn't mean that there's no risk of a nuclear accident happening. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of everything we've covered in today's video are for Russia and the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, as usual, can I ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content? Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm getting closer to 200,000, still quite a long way yet, but if you could help me out, that would be fantastic. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if you haven't got time to watch the whole thing front to back, you can pick and choose which sections you want to watch. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below, where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon shopping links. Both the United Kingdom and the European Union have confirmed that in a worst-case scenario, there is a potential for blackouts to take place on a regular basis throughout the whole of this winter. The United Kingdom's National Grid Electricity Systems Operator, which owns and controls the network of gas and electricity supplies in the UK, recently published a document stating that in the event of gas shortages this winter, it would need to impose controlled 3-hour blackouts on a daily basis. These blackouts would be introduced during peak hours in specified areas, and people would be given advance notice that it was going to happen. Now, the main reason that there is a potential for blackouts is that around 40% of all of the UK's electricity is produced using natural gas. And as you'll be aware if you follow the channel, the price of natural gas has increased dramatically in the whole of Europe following the Ukraine war, because Russia was the biggest supplier of natural gas across the whole of the continent. And what we've seen since the start of the war is a scramble by a number of countries to try to move away from buying from Russia. And that's led to a huge increase in price and potential shortages. And following on from this announcement, the European Union Crisis Management Commissioner has advised that the European Union is also facing a similar prospect of blackouts as a result of the fact that a lot of countries in the Union use gas to produce electricity. Now, you may be watching this video thinking, what's the fuss? Does it really matter if we have a 3-hour blackout these days? Because if you've got advance notice, you can prepare for that. You can get ready. You can get candles out. You can put an extra jumper on. Maybe put the heating on for a couple of hours beforehand to make sure that your house is nice and warm. So anybody can get through a 3-hour period. But one of the challenges that everybody faces in Europe is that mobile telecommunication devices are not seen as being protected assets. So when you have the potential for a planned blackout, there are certain pieces of infrastructure that you can prioritise to make sure that they keep getting electricity. So this will be absolute safety essentials, such as hospitals, airports, traffic lights on roads, those sort of things that if you have a sudden loss of power, it could cause major disasters to occur. But unfortunately, mobile telecommunication masts are not included on that list. So if we have a 3-hour blackout or a 5-hour blackout occurring in some of these countries, that would mean that you wouldn't be able to use your cell phone, you wouldn't have any Wi-Fi in your house, you would have a complete blackout in terms of the internet. And for a lot of people, that is an absolute worst-case disaster scenario. If you think back to the COVID pandemic, when everybody was forced to stay at home, we had the lockdowns, everybody was fully dependent on the internet. We all got used to working from home, talking to people using FaceTime or Zoom or Microsoft Teams or WhatsApp. We were all constantly messaging. We were all constantly watching things on the internet. So if you now imagine a winter period where there is no internet connection for 3 or 4 or 5 hours a day, that's going to represent a big challenge to a lot of people. You won't be able to watch YouTube, for example. So it's going to be really interesting to see what does happen. My gut feel on this is that the authorities in all of the countries in Europe will do their utmost to avoid having any of these planned blackouts. This is a worst case scenario. Obviously, it hits the headlines. That's the sort of thing that journalists like to report upon. And indeed, I'm actually passing the messages on to you. So that's what I'm doing essentially here. But I think that the authorities will try to avoid it. But there is a genuine, real possibility that if we do see a very cold winter occurring in Europe, that will massively increase the demand for gas and electricity. And it will run down the reserves much quicker than expected. So if that does happen, then there is a real chance that come January or February, that a lot of countries could have run down all of their stocks. They'll be struggling to replace those stocks because Russia isn't sending the amount of gas that it has been sending. And there could be a genuine possibility of having some real blackouts. And it would be fascinating to see how the world will cope with that.
The last of 4 regular power lines supplying the site was briefly cut on Thursday, meaning the plant had to resort to backup power for the first time and thinning its defenses against a potentially catastrophic meltdown. Russia, which invaded Ukraine in February, captured the Zaporizhia plant in March, but Ukrainian technicians have kept it operating under the orders of Russian forces. It is the largest nuclear plant in Europe. Russia and Ukraine have accused each other of shelling the site, fueling fears of a nuclear disaster. In an interview with Reuters, Ukraine's energy minister said he'd never dreamed any military would risk firing on a nuclear plant.
Any games with the nuclear plant will mean that it has to be turned off from our energy system. This means a blackout of the plant, which has huge risks attached to it. A huge risk approaching that of a nuclear war.
Nuclear experts have warned of the risk of an accident at the plant's spent nuclear fuel pools or its reactors. Cuts in power could prevent the plant from cooling spent fuel, potentially causing a disastrous meltdown. The United Nations is insisting the area around the plant be demilitarized.
It's been reported that the electricity supplies to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant have now been cut as a result of additional shelling in the area. And this is a major problem because although the power plant has actually been shut down, so it's no longer producing any electricity, and all of the nuclear reactors are in shutdown mode, there is still a potential risk of a nuclear meltdown happening. Because even though the reactors have been shut down, there is still a potential for a meltdown if cooling does not take place. Now, in a recent video, I discussed the potential risks of a nuclear incident occurring at Zaporizhia. But in that video, we focused our attention on terrorist activity, the potential for retreating Russian forces to put some explosive devices into the plant to try to damage the nuclear reactors. But the risk that's being highlighted right now is that because the electricity has been cut to the power plant, it's now fully dependent on its diesel generators. It needs those generators to keep the cooling systems working around the nuclear reactors to make sure that the radioactive material doesn't overheat and go into meltdown. Now, unless you're a nuclear physicist, you're probably not that familiar with how nuclear reactors and nuclear power plants work. And the way that the Zaporizhia plant has been set up, it's very similar to the way the Japanese nuclear power industry operates. So let's have a look at some information that gives you an explanation as to how these systems operate. And this was produced as a result of the meltdown that occurred in Fukushima in Japan following the initial earthquake and subsequent tsunami.
This footage inside the building was taken during a regular inspection. The nuclear reactor is housed behind this robust wall. This is what a nuclear reactor looks like. The uranium inside the fuel rod inside the reactor undergoes nuclear fission. The rods emit heat, generating energy. Usually water cools them to maintain their temperature at 270 degrees Celsius. But if the cooling fails, the temperature could rise to over 1200 degrees. This temperature is hot enough to melt the fuel rods. When the earthquake hit, the first safety system to prevent a meltdown was activated. Control rods rose into the reactor to stop the nuclear fission. As planned, the reactor stopped operating. But the fuel rods were still hot. Water should have been circulated to cool them down. However, this didn't happen because of a power outage right after the quake. So the second safety system turned on. The emergency diesel power generator began spraying the rods with coolant. But an hour later, something unexpected happened. Without warning, the emergency generator stopped. Around this time, the tsunami, possibly as high as 10 meters, hit the power plant. Experts think this is what caused the generator to fail. Now, the third safety system started operating. It converts steam traveling through the pipes into water. It cools the rods, but the water level went down and the temperature continued to rise. All three safety measures had failed. Professor Akira Omoto of the Japan Atomic Energy Commission was involved in construction of the Fukushima plants. He thinks the cooling water somehow leaked from the reactor.
The reactor's coolants must have leaked somewhere in the building. We thought we had taken adequate precautions for a tsunami, but what happened was beyond our expectations.
To forcibly cool the reactor, seawater had to be pumped into it and the containment vessel. Similar failures and a huge explosion also hit another reactor at the plant.
So hopefully that gives you a better understanding as to what goes on in a nuclear reactor. But the bottom line here is that in nuclear power stations, you're dealing with a very dangerous form of energy. Unless carefully controlled and measured, the uranium in the nuclear reactor can overheat, can go into meltdown. And if that was to happen in Zaporizhzhia, then there is a real potential for a nuclear meltdown. Now, in addition to the recent loss of power, we've also got a power struggle going on between Russia and Ukraine, and a disagreement with regards to who's going to be operating this plant. Following Russia's recent annexation of the four occupied territories, President Putin signed a decree which takes over full control of the nuclear power plant in Zaporizhzhia. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Vershinin recently stated the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant is now on the territory of the Russian Federation and accordingly should be operated under the supervision of all relevant agencies. Russia's nuclear power operator, Rosenergotem, said in a statement that it would conduct an assessment of how to repair damage and transfer all existing Ukrainian employees to a new Russian-owned organization. The new operating organization is designed to ensure the safe operation of the nuclear power plant and the professional activities of the existing plant personnel, it said. However, the head of Ukraine's state nuclear energy company said that he was taking charge of the plant and urged workers there not to sign any documents with its Russian occupiers. "We will continue to work under Ukrainian law with the Ukrainian energy system." So this power station is now at the focal point of the struggle between Russia and Ukraine. Russia has claimed all of the occupied land as its own, and as this power station is included on that land, it sees the power station as being part of the Russian infrastructure. However, Ukraine does not agree with Russia's annexation and therefore wants to retain the power station as part of the Ukrainian system. But the critical issue at the heart of this matter is that the nuclear reactors are dangerous. They need to be controlled and managed carefully to make sure that no disaster takes place. And the loss of electricity is obviously putting that plant under pressure. It now is fully reliant upon diesel generators. And that means that it needs to keep a constant supply of diesel coming to the area. Now, Ukraine is currently looking to cut all of Russia's supplies to stop it feeding all of the frontline troops. but those supplies will now have to include the diesel that's needed to keep these generators going. So there's a real fine balancing act here between the war and making sure that something disastrous doesn't happen in this nuclear power plant. And Russia's now trying to take control of all of the Ukrainian employees and make them part of some Russian company, because it needs these experts to keep the plant operational. But that represents a challenge in itself, because the Ukrainian employees don't want to work for a Russian company. So obviously this is an ongoing and live situation, but I thought it was worth bringing it to your attention, because there is a risk of some sort of disaster happening at this plant. If it's to be avoided, the plant needs ongoing power supplies, and it also needs to keep all of its people in place. But you can see the problems that are starting to emerge as the fighting continues and the divisions between Ukraine's and Russian politics get stronger. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because I think it's easy for us all to get a little bit complacent and start to think that Europe has actually got over the worst of its problems, they've managed to find some alternative supplies in terms of gas, and that everything is now on an even keel and we can move forward with the new arrangement of no purchases from Russia. However, the actual situation is much more serious than that, and this winter is really going to be the acid test as to whether or not Europe can actually get by without those Russian gas supplies. Now, Russia isn't sending any more gas through the Nord Stream pipelines because they've been damaged, and they've actually been winding down the amount that they're sending through all of the other pipelines. So Europe is now testing its new supply chains. And the modelling that's been done by the authorities shows that it's just about possible, given the amount of reserves that are currently in place, for Europe to be able to squeak through the winter period. However, that model does depend on a number of assumptions. The first is that Europe will be able to cut down its usage, and the second is that this will be an average winter. Now, cutting your usage of electricity and gas is a little bit like a New Year's resolution. You have very good intentions at the time, and you believe that you're going to be able to do it. But when push comes to shove, quite often, it's more difficult in reality. And I think over the next few months, it will be really fascinating to see whether or not there is any sort of drop in usage from Europe. It's been reported that Germany's usage in September is 14% higher this year than it was last year. Now, that's as a result of slightly colder weather, and that really is the point here. If we have a colder winter this year than we did last year, then it goes without saying that demand for energy will increase. So we're really at the behest of the weather here, and that is the crux of the problem here. If you look at what's been going on in 2022 from a weather perspective, we have seen some real extremes. We've seen the hottest day ever announced in the UK. We saw multiple heat waves all across the world. We've seen intense flooding. We've seen long dry spells. The weather is becoming a lot more unpredictable, predominantly because of global warming. So it's entirely likely that this winter we could get some very cold weather. It might even happen for a prolonged period. And if that happens, then there is a genuine possibility that Europe will run out of gas. And when it runs out of gas, that has two implications. Firstly, consumers and industry won't be able to get gas to be able to heat their homes for cooking and for use in industrial processes. And secondly, we won't be able to use gas to generate electricity, and therefore there is a high chance of blackouts. Now, the authorities have raised this issue as a potential risk. They've said that we could see controlled blackouts in a number of areas. And everybody's been told to calm down, it won't happen, it's a worst case scenario. But what we've seen this year is the worst case scenario has happened on a variety of occasions all across the world. So my feel is that we will get a very cold winter, and that it's likely that those energy reserves will be put under intense pressure. And I think there's a high possibility that we will see regular blackouts occurring in Europe for the first time since World War II. And whilst the actual war continues on the ground, the political war over the assets within Ukraine is now starting to heat up. President Putin recently signed his decree, which took control of all of the areas of Ukraine, and that includes the nuclear power plant in Zaporizhia. And he's trying to now grandfather in all of the employees to become Russian employees. Now, the people on the ground don't want that. They're not interested in joining Russia and becoming Russian citizens. So they're pushing against it. And the problem that the world has is that there's a nuclear power plant that needs to stay operational at the heart of this discussion. And as we saw in the video, uranium is constantly active. The only way to shut down a power plant is actually to physically insert rods and to stop all of the uranium from overheating. Now, as you saw earlier, in order to cool those uranium rods, you need to have electricity to generate all of the cooling system. And earlier this week, the electricity supplying the power station was cut off, which meant that it had to then revert to its diesel generators. Now, this issue represents a major problem for this power plant. Prior to the war starting, there were four sources of electricity that were fed into this plant. So we had the primary source and three backups. Since the war started, three of those sources have been entirely cut off. So it now only has one direct source of electricity, and that was cut this week. So there is a real chance that this power plant will end up being fully dependent on its diesel generators. And of course, those generators are then fully dependent on having enough diesel. Now, there is active warfare going on in Zaporizhia right now, and Ukraine is trying to cut off the supplies to the Russian forces in order to force them back in the same way as they've done in other territories. Now, if they do cut off those supplies and the Russian troops can't get any diesel to those generators, then there is a risk that if this power plant is in the heart of the fighting and nobody is looking after it, that diesel could run out. Then that would mean there would be no power supply to those cooling systems, and we would be in serious risk of a meltdown situation. Now, I don't need to remind you of the full details of what happened in 1986 in Chernobyl, but needless to say, the meltdown that occurred caused a major explosion and radioactive fallout, and the area around that power plant is still unoccupied over 35 years later. So this remains a live and active problem for both Ukraine and Russia, because they're fighting over the land, but the last thing that they want is for this land to become entirely uninhabitable because there is some form of nuclear explosion. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when they happen. Hopefully you found today's video interesting, informative and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.